You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded, unsurrendered territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I am Robin Erickson, and I am your host today. I am joined over Zoom by Rachel Cairns, who is an artist and creator who believes in staying curious and following her bliss. As an artist, she writes, performs, and directs stories that explore the human condition and remind us of the universal spirit that connects us to one another. As a producer and creator, she connects with artists to help them realize their vision, helping them harness their talents to create momentum in their careers. She cut her teeth making short films and web series that have screened at festivals internationally, garnering nominations and awards, and has been viewed millions of times on YouTube. Rachel is the creator of Abortion, a new podcast series about abortion in Canada that will begin airing on CJSF on Monday, August the 1st at 10 a.m. and will run for 10 consecutive weeks, which I'm really excited about. And Rachel joins me today to talk about the podcast and why we need to hear about these things. So welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thanks so much for having me, Robin.
Let's just jump right in and learn about maybe which came first, your desire to create work about abortion or your desire to make art in response to the anti-choice fervor and legislation that's happening stateside.
Definitely the first, just in terms of, you know, my own personal timing. It kind of astounds me that it is aligned with this huge cultural emergency that we're experiencing right now. But yeah, my abortion was in 2019, and that kind of was the impetus of my own personal geekdom about reproductive rights and justice. Yeah.
Yeah, and then funny just how timing works that way, right?
Yeah, like couldn't have. It was just kind infuriatingly, unfortunately perfect timing to launch a podcast about this, sadly.
How do you understand the relationship between woman's autonomy over her body and reproductive rights in general?
Yeah, I thought this was a really interesting question because, you know, it's like my honest first reaction to it is like, oh, is this even a question? You know what I mean? Like, it's so fundamental to basic equality. One of the guests I have on the podcast, her name is Rachel Johnstone, and she's a political science professor at Dalhousie. And she wrote a book called After Morgenthaler, which really outlines a case for realizing positive rights recognition and provision of abortion and reproductive rights. Now, this is like we're getting into very like heady political science territory already. basically, like rights kind of fall conceptually into two camps. They can be positive and negative. And a negative right is like a freedom from interference. So, you know, freedom of religion, free speech, those sort of things, that's like a negative right, you know, namely the government does not have the right to interfere with you, your relationship to that right. A positive right is kind of the opposite of that. It requires a bit of a collaborative situation. Like the government has some sort of fundamental duty to help you realize that right. So Rachel Johnstone, you know, her work in this book was really outlining a case for that. Now, that doesn't mean creating a law around abortion. All of the reproductive rights and justice advocates, certainly in our country, is like, that is absolutely not what we need to do. And maybe we can talk about that in a minute. But to address the first part of this question, in Rachel's book, there's a sentence that she has. I'm probably going to botch it because I don't have it in front of me. So, I don't know if it's, you know, her idea or if she's referencing her own research from, you know, the body of reproductive rights philosophy out there. But she basically says, you know, abortion is the only human right that did not originate as a right granted solely to men. And I think that that is very revealing as to why it is such a controversial and difficult issue for some people to grapple with. For me, it's not. It's very obvious. It's like, I've always been, you know, no duh, we believe in abortion. In fact, you know, parts of my own experience took me by surprise because I had, I think, taken reproductive rights for granted growing up in Canada, growing up on the West Coast, having a very feminist mother, running in very progressive circles. And then these kind of roadblocks or hitches in my own experiences of accessing abortion kind of opened my eyes to, oh, we still have a lot further to go, actually.
Wow. But what you just said blew my mind.
Aww.
about these rights.
Yeah.
You know, and how abortion and reproductive rights are the first rights granted solely to women and birthing bodies.
Exactly. Yeah.
And not men. And so it just feels like such a devastating blow, really.
Yeah, I think it's really indicative that although we have come such a long way in terms of, you know, equality, certainly my experience growing up identifying like as a woman in the world is very different from my mother's, from my grandmother's, from my great grandmother's, like astoundingly so. But it does open your eyes to the misogyny that we are still deeply steeped in terms of how society operates. So
very interesting though, and good to know, I guess, in terms of, you know, how as people who want to stand in solidarity with you know, pro-choice issues, mm-hmm. That it kind of gives us a little bit of fuel for the machine.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So always looking for the bright side.
You must.
You were mentioning, you know, that this is one thing that you learned from one of your guests on the podcast. But what else have you learned by undertaking this project?
I think
if you can encapsulate it.
Yeah, totally. I think I have two kind of, you know, relatively concise encapsulations. The first one would be, I already kind of felt this, but I think creating the project and, you know, coming up, speaking with the experts and the activists that I've, you know, had the privilege to connect with, it really reinforced for me that so often abortion has been kind of siloed as a stigmatized and taboo issue. And, you know, it is part of the work socially that we have to do in terms of destigmatizing it and normalizing it is really understanding it in relation to the major issues that we are all facing. So, like, on a personal note for myself, I had an abortion, but I'm somebody who wants a family. It was just not the right time for me or my partner or my potential child and future children for me to begin my family. But when I think about the decision to have kids or not, I'm thinking about what my housing costs me and what realistically my partner and I, where we realistically need to be in our lives, even just to like rent a 2-bedroom apartment. I'm thinking about, you know, are we going to be one of those people lucky enough to get a $10 a day childcare spot, or will the supply not be ready enough yet? I think about our environmental policy and the planet that my kids and future generations are going to inherit. I think about, again, as like identifying as a woman, I think about when I time having my kids, if I can, you know, the impacts that that's going to have on my career and my trajectory and how much I earn. We have very solid data that women and people who have children, the more children they have, the less likely they are to be earning the equivalent of what a male counterpart of their age is earning. You know, and these are just issues that directly impact me. There's so many more beyond my own experience to how, you know, Indigenous communities and particularly women have experienced choice in our country presently and historically, and how we really need to be addressing that to, you know, the abolition of the prison system, to how cities are built. Like, and you can all find these interconnections with abortion. So de-siloing, destigmatizing abortion and reproductive rights was the kind of one of the largest takeaways. And the second big takeaway, which it was just very personal to me. Another guest, her name is Sarah Kaplan, and she founded the Institute for Gender and the Economy that operates out of Rotman Business School here at U of T. I asked her, a bit of a spoiler, like the final episode of Abortion is sort of a tell them what you told them episode, where I kind of reiterate a lot of the key messages that each of the guests shared. And I also asked each of my guests to articulate what they felt progress would look like in the next 10 years to really make sure we stay on like a hopeful bent and a productive conversation. And when I asked Sarah Kaplan this, she paused for a really long time. And then she said something to the effect of, you know, I should have a really good answer for this. And one of the reasons that I don't have a good answer for this is because I've been, you know, she's not an economist, but she essentially is understanding how business and the economy works. And her research is deeply in innovation and really understanding the intersections of gendered injustices in society. It's huge. But anyways, she's been doing this work for 30 years. And she was like, if I have seen so little progress, relatively speaking, in 30 years, what can I really hope for in the next 10? And that broke my heart. And then she kind of rallied and she did offer something, which was basically that she said, if we can somehow normalize caring as something that is essential to everyone's responsibility. And I think she's meaning caring in terms of what we call the care economy, which are traditionally, those are jobs that are literally taking care of society's well-being. That could be everything from like healthcare to cashiers and cleaners and caterers and people who look after kids and our elderly. So people who are really doing the work to take care of society's population and workforce, essentially. And traditionally, women have made up the majority of these industries, and therefore their work is undervalued because also traditionally women generally do this work for free for their own families and kin. So she was just saying that if we can value that, and if we can normalize that as something that we don't just ask women to do for free or for less than they should be paid, we will therefore be reframing how we design jobs, because jobs are not designed with care work in mind. We will be reframing how we look at a lot of policy on a number of levels of society. We'll be looking at how we design cities. You know, it would be a tremendous kind of ideological and cultural shift. So that is something that really stuck with me as a profound shift in terms of how you're looking at how the world works. And you know, on one hand, it really resonated with me, and it's ever since that conversation, there's a little part of me that's always kind of asked, like, how can you care more? How can I ask for more care from my, you know, partnership, all that kind of stuff. But it's also a little bit too of that, like, oh shit, so often the reality is, you know, people just don't care unless it's happened to you or unless it's personally affecting you. So I've been thinking about that a lot ever since I spoke with her and as the project continues to evolve. So yeah,
thank you for that. And I think you know, one of the blessings of COVID too is showing us where those care gaps are, right?
Absolutely.
And so much how women are the largest affected demographic within that realm, and so yeah, we might see a difference, hopefully, out of this all.
I want to see a difference.
Yeah, likewise. Before we talk a little bit more, I know that you brought a few songs to share that are really amazing, and I want to take some time right now to listen to one of them. Do you want to tell us what we'll hear?
Sure. Let's listen to Angry All the Time by Lunar Bloom. These are my friends. They're a band out of Toronto. And this is a song off of their first album, which they just released. And I love how it sounds. I think it's got a good hook, and I relate to the feeling.
Guess I'm angry all the time. I can't see why. Heart dictating why house now, or I can scream, or I will scream.
Welcome back. That was Angry All the Time by Lunar Bloom, song selection by my guest, Rachel Cairns, who is the creator of Abortion, a new podcast series about abortion in Canada. And we've been talking a little bit about, you know, what you've learned and what you think reproductive rights look like in general. And I want to turn and ask what your creative process has looked like through this project.
Okay. So I think like to kind of describe it linearly, I guess, even from like the jump of this, my personal abortion experience, my creative process got engaged. So if you listen to the podcast, it opens with the conversation that I had with my GP when I discovered I was pregnant and I asked, like, how do you get an abortion? Basically, I asked, how do you get an abortion? And he asked me a string of questions that were asking me to qualify this choice, which included asking me about my relationship status, qualifying how committed that relationship was, asking me how much money I made, asking me how much money my partner made, asking, once he had, you know, ascertained that he felt we made enough money to have a kid, why I didn't want one. And then also didn't tell me really how to get the abortion. So that was quite alarming to me. And while I was in the doctor's office, it was like, you know, I just answered his questions very directly because, you know, my largest priority and concern was I don't want to be pregnant and I want to just, you know, find the solution to this as quickly as possible. So I answered his questions in an attempt to be a good patient, to just, you know, not create any friction, to hopefully get an answer that I was seeking, which I didn't. But, you know, so there was part of me that was just like panicked and wanting to just, you know, be smart and navigate swiftly. There was another part of me that was very aware that his line of questioning was deeply inappropriate. And I think because I'm an actor and an artist, it sort of ignited a muse in my ear almost, you know, and I'm always a little bit like, is it a muse in your ear or are you like dissociating because you're in a situation where you don't have control and it's your body trying to protect you from potential trauma? Like, who knows? But anyways, in that conversation, there was a part of me that for whatever reason kind of ignited and was like, this is a scene with a lot of conflict in it. And then in terms of my own experience, as I waited for my abortion, had the abortion itself, you know, the weeks after the abortion, in my own personal life, there was just a lot of moments where, yeah, like the part of me that's a writer was kind of like, my brain would be like, oh, that's a scene, or what that person just said is really interesting or profound or whatever. So I started kind of like, for whatever reason, my creativity was attuned to these moments in my life that were very much related to the abortion. And I also, in my own personal experience of the abortion, you know, first and foremost, I'm very much a, like, abortion is normal, it's not a big deal, it's just a ball of cells kind of person. And that's me talking personally about my own opinions and perspective on it. For some people, it is a big deal and it's totally allowed to be. And also, it was kind of for me too. And I had a lot, it was difficult for me to grapple with the reality of that. As I said earlier, like, I am somebody who wants a family, and I was 31 at the time. So even though it was absolutely the best choice for me, I would not have chosen any differently. There was a part of me that was like, I feel really shitty that I'm 31. I'm now gambling with my biological clock, and my life isn't together enough to make the choice I would like to make if my circumstances were different. And I felt really bad about that. And I felt really scared about, am I going to be able to get my shit together in the next 5 to 10 years to have one, maybe more kids if I want to, you know? And that was really scary and something that, you know, it wasn't a comfortable feeling to be having. And how I really coped and processed that, for whatever reason, was like devouring information about abortion and reproductive rights. So I started that's when I really started kind of almost immediately Googling as much as I could, reading as much as I could, listening to podcasts, like watching movies that were about abortion. Like, it made me feel better. It was like totally a coping mechanism and definitely one very much centered in like control. But it helped me. And then I was collecting all this information, and I started to feel like I wanted to organize it again in a creative way. And it first manifested actually as a play, because I, you know, one of the things I do is act. I have a background in theater. Fleabag, we were still like on the Fleabag wave. Like, we were all like high on Phoebe Waller-Bridge's, rightfully so. So when these little scenes were kind of happening, I would often see them in my head as like a woman alone on stage. And I wrote a one-woman show also titled Abortion. But then the pandemic shortly happened, theater died. And I also began to be like, the podcasting medium came to me just because I consume a lot of podcasts. And I also thought that it had the ability to, you know, it was really important to me that although I still love the one-woman show incarnation of this project and hope I can do it one day, you know, first and foremost, even though I share my experience in the project, it's really important to me that I hold space for the conversation beyond my own experience, because I'm only this like one blip on a huge continuum of what reproductive choice means. So the podcast is kind of lends itself better to just holding more space. And just practically speaking, has the potential to reach a lot more people and like around the world. Whereas like you do a run at a fringe festival, you're going to maybe like get 500 people at best. So that happened over the next, you know, over the course of 2 years until here we are today.
You touch on this a little bit in terms of what some of the challenges and the drawbacks have been, you know, COVID interrupting everything. But are there others that sort of arose in putting abortion together, or things that you faced?
Definitely. Like, I did get a lot of no's, particularly from like the theatrical community, which felt bad. Rejection's never nice. But I also, I'm a hippie at heart. So I also kind of turn those no's into the like, okay, the universe is redirecting me. So, you know, follow that path. And I think the challenges like that are more pod